ॐ सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति 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 Okay, this whole section that we've been on now for a while is dealing with vairagya, right? For whom and for what and for whose sake? It's the second line of the verse, right? What and for whose sake do we, would a person who has knowledge, you know, who knows the self, for whom and for whose sake? But for whose sake would one get so perturbed over what the body is doing? Body means what you, in as a jiva, are engaged in. So this is talking about the pulla of this knowledge. And so now in this first section, since we're now in the second line, right, he's spending a lot of time talking about vairagya. So, shiddhiya pidhiya manaha, shiddhiya pidhiya manaha.
Which verse?
142. Did I say the wrong number? 142. Chudaya pidyam, chudaya pidyamanaha, chudaya pidyamanaha. Is it a typo? I think this is right. Chudaya pidyamanopi, chudaya pidyamanopi. Navisham yatumichati, navisham yatumichati, mishta nadvastatrinjanan, mishta nadvastatrinjanan, namudastajigatsati, namudastajigatsati, chidhya pidyamanaha api. Na visham hi atum ichati. Mishta anna dwasta trid janan na amudaha tet jikatsati. A lot of sandhi in this one. So, this is a nice example for a vairagya. He goes like this. Even though shuddha means person, you know, tremendous hunger, starving, person is really hungry. So even though a person is pidyamanaha, is really afflicted, hurting because of hunger, out of hunger, person is starving and really uncomfortable because they're so darned hungry. So shuddhiya pidyamanaha api, still na visham hi etim ichati. Still definitely, that person would not have a desire to eat poison. Visham is poison, right? So even though very, very hungry, that person would not have a desire to eat poison. Okay? So it says. Now especially, mishta anna dvasta trit. Trit means a person whose thread means thirst or desire. Another word they use for thirst, we do it in English also, thirst is often used for desire. He has a real thirst for that. He has a real desire for that. So here, a person whose thirst has been dvasta, destroyed, taken away, dvasta thread, been totally destroyed, taken away, how mishta anna, by having eaten food which was very satisfying, mishta anna, food that was very savory food, food that was very savory, very, very good. So if a person's hunger, their desire, was totally satiated, totally removed by food, by eating food which was very, very good, well, such a person who is amudaha, not deluded, a normal person, we're not even... So a normal person who is jhana, they've eaten a big meal, okay? They're totally satiated, and jhana, they are knowing that this food is poison. And they're not hungry at all. Okay? They're knowing that this food is poison, and they're not deluded. They're a normal person, a mudaha. Okay? That person, he says, na tad jigatsati, would have no desire to eat that. Okay, so there's twofold things here. Even a person, this is a thing, a person may be starving and see some food there, but know that that food is poisonous. You could still, seeing the food, have a strong desire to eat it. You may be able to control it, right? Because it's poison, and it will really hurt you and make you sick. It's like people who are starving are so thirsty, they'll be so tempted to drink salt water. Because it is water after all. But of course, that it's salt water, that can be deadly to drink that water. But you'll still, you see the water there, and you'll still have a strong desire to drink the water. So a starving person can even be a cannibal. You know, because the starvation is so much that even though, say, that food may be rotten or deadly, you know, or full of maggots, I mean, really, still, and could be poisonous, you can still have a desire to eat it, even though you may say no, because of tremendous strength and viveka, you know, no. But now what about a person who has already had a sumptuous meal? They're full. They don't have any hunger at all. And they're not crazy. Okay? They're not deluded at all. They're amudaha. Then that person, knowing that that food is poison, would they have any desire whatsoever to eat it? And the answer is obviously no. So now, here, in this situation, for jnani, a jivan mukta, somebody who has recognized the ananda, my own nature, that my mind has recognized where the source, what is the source of ananda? What is the source of wholeness, of fullness, of being full? What is the source of being full for this mind? It has recognized it. And abiding there, you know, not searching out here, abiding there, that mind is full, because the self is full. And the mind sits there for its satisfaction. It revels there for its satisfaction. So it has what we call this alam buddhi, the jnani's mind, alam buddhi. All is fine, all is well with me. That's the mind, like, all is well with me. Why? Because all is well with the self. The mind is not away from the self, and the ananda, which is the self, right? The mind sits there, rests there. So now, such a mind, looking out at these sense objects, jhanan, knowing that they are poison, all of them, they are poison. Why are they poison? In what sense? Right? They're poison in the sense that they don't give you what you seek. They don't have the capacity to give you any type of lasting happiness. In fact, from the onset, in the fulfillment of any desire, from the onset, there's dukkha. From the onset, there's strain. Right? And so, so it's been equated to this visham, right? Because it has a deadly end. The deadly end is dukkha, right? And so since it has a deadly end, he's going to go on about this. So there's some really useful things. There's Vidyaranya or Bhattatirtha, I think. There's two people that are involved, they say, in writing this Panchadashi. But in any case, they make such strong images for making a case for vairagya, you know. And so I had to kind of wrap my mind around it and see, well, you know, actually what they're saying, there's so much truth in it. You know, we're just not used to thinking about it in these kind of extreme terms. But the fact is, in your experience, a desire, when a desire rises, means I want something. If I want something, means The way it is right now is not all right. Now I want something. I need to add this or get rid of this from my repertoire in order for me to be happy. So now that means that from the very rise of the desire, there is what we call klesha. There is dukkha. Just in the very rise of the desire, because now all of a sudden this desire has come, means that I am not just at peace with the way things are and able to respond to the universe the way it is, to act in the universe objectively the way it is, to participate in it, but not for the sake of becoming full. The instant I have a desire, the real kind of desire, you know, then all of a sudden the universe the way it is, people the way they are, situation the way that it is not satisfactory for me. And so it becomes something which I need to change, to modify in some way or another. That, from that very beginning, there's a dukkha, there's a stress, there's a sorrow, because I can't relax in the way things are. And so Ajnani, as Vidyaranya is going through this, doesn't even like for the desire to rise. That's the beginning of the dukkha. Right? And so why would Ajnani, a Jivanmukta, right, who's already full, who's already complete and full, why would they seek that out? Where would the temptation be for somebody who has the vairagya? And this is another thing to say, listen, when we talk about vairagya, if we just translate it as dispassion, vairagya, dispassion. Dispassion for a mumukshu is one thing. The dispassion, vairagya for a mumukshu is all of these things are subject to change. They don't have the capacity to make me happy. Therefore, I'm not going to fulfill myself by seeking them. It's not going to work. And so, therefore, in a sense, they become tainted in my mind, in the sense that I may have a desire for them, but at the same time I know that they're not able to fulfill me, to give me what I want. That's the condition of a mumukshu who doesn't know the self. They've just recognized, oh, the creation is like this. I'm not able to become whole and complete, or just to be able to relax in a creation that's subject to continual change. Where's the constancy? So that's the vairagya of a mumukshu. But that vairagya converts into ananda. The fulfillment of vairagya is ananda. Ananda means I have vairagya, dispassion, the world can, in the sense, out of fullness. Because I am full, I am full, all is well with me. I don't need something to make me full. If I am full and complete, and I know that the source of the ananda that I've sought is a samsari, that its very source is my own swarupa, is Brahman, is my own being, then that mind has completed itself. And so now out of fullness I have vairagya, not out of the horror of realizing that these objects can't give me the fullness. When I have the fullness, you see that it makes a huge difference. I don't have the fullness, this universe can't give it to me, I'm not interested in this, I'm interested in gaining liberation. You know? So this is vairagya toward this. Now as a jnani, I have the fullness. I found it, right? I found it that it was my own being. I found it. That's what the whole teaching, that whole unfoldment is. So I find this now. Now out of fullness I have vairagya. Okay? So now for a person out of fullness, knowing the truth of it, knowing that the ananda is not here in the world, but the ananda is my own being, and that this world in fact cannot provide it for me, then what would be the temptation to go out and find it here? In fact, as soon as that, because of prarabdha and other reasons, these desires arise, that arising desire itself for jnani is a klesha. It's something that we would rather not even have to deal with at all, because it just interrupts, in a sense, the natural shanti. Okay? And so it's viewed, the whole thing, as you'll say, Vidyaranya views the whole thing as a klesha. In this verse, of course, he's viewing it as poison. Okay. Let's look at, now he's going to talk about, then because the next question is going to come, well, does this mean that for Jivan Mukta, for Jnani, that a desire doesn't ever, no desires arise? He says, no, it's not quite like that. So let's look at this verse. Prarabdha karma prabhavyat. Prarabdha karma prabhavyat. Bhogeshwicha bhavet yadi. Bhogeshwicha bhavet yadi. Klishyan neva tarapyesha. Klishyan neva tarapyesha. Bhunkte vishti grahitavat. Bhunkte vishti grahitavat. Prarabdha karma prabalyat bhogeshu icha bhavet yadi klishyan eva tada api eshaha bhunte vishti grahitavat. He says, if there is a desire, bhogeshu icha bhavet yadi, if there is, for this for jnani, if there is a desire for enjoyment, for an object of enjoyment, if that should arise, he says, prarabdha karma prabalyat. It's because of the strength of one's prarabdha karma. We'll see later in a verse when Vidyaranya talks about what really propels, how does the prarabdha karma manifest in a given life to propel you from one action to another. This is for jnani and ajnani. There are three ways. We'll see it in detail later. There's three ways. One is called anyecha. Some other, anya means another person, the desire of another person. They'll pull you in. And that will be the impetus, the creation's impetus to move you from point A to point B. Right? So it's the whole, the scheme of the whole. It's not to do with you. In the scheme of the whole picture, the whole movie, of the creation, how does Bhagawan get you from point A to B? Well, one way is to have others pull you in. I need you to do this. Please do this for me. Whatever. Other people will pull in, the situation will be, the impetus for you will be the draw of another person. Or it can be anicca. It's not the draw of any human being. It's the this. It's the movement of the creation itself, not to do with beings, but the movement of the creation itself creates a situation that you find yourself in. Not because somebody asked you, and not because you desired it, but just the very unfoldment, the natural order of the creation of your prarabdha will put you in that situation. Not somebody asked you. But the third one is swecha, swaicha. The desire arises from your own mind, from your own buddhi, from your own psyche. That also is prarabdha. Because you have to remember, it's in the whole universe, the whole order of things that includes the mind, body, sense organs, and this world. It's not just the impetus for movement need not just come out of from outside. It can come from inside also. Or it can come from your own mind, because your own mind also is part of the prarabdha. Right? And in fact, the prarabdha karma is generated from you. And in fact, it's a very, very useful thing to do, to know that, because you can see what is really coming from you. What are desires that are coming from the outside? I don't mean anyecha now, just things that you've picked up from the outside, as opposed to what it is that you really want to do. What is coming from the inside? What is really an expression of yourself? That's the prarabdha karma. That prarabdha karma can come in the form of desire. So hear what they say. Not a desire that you've asked for. Like Swamiji, even when he was talking when he got into this aim for seva. You know, this aim for seva, he never thought. I mean, here he is almost 80 years old. He's in his 70s and this thing started. He never had any intent for it at all. But then in his 70s, he himself, other people wanted it. He himself had a desire for it. He's totally into it. It's like another person. He told me that. It's like another person has been born. It's like a second life. He's totally involved in it, totally committed to it, totally into it. He's got the Icha. You know, the Icha Shakti. That Icha Shakti, that is the power of desire that will push him into doing all of these things. He's himself is shocked. You know, he thought he was actually in his early 70s, he was getting ready, really very much prepared to go up to Rishikesh
and stay
at his Puranajati to just sit and stay at the and stay there and then let all of these things take care of themselves. And you know, he's taught enough students and all of that, and so he was really for several years had been preparing for that. And then this whirlwind came. You just look at your own life, the desires that rise, desires that you never would have even guessed, really. But then there they are, and they come with the energy, enough energy to propel you into that course of your life. That's a swecha. It's your own desire. It's your prarabdha manifesting from the strength of your own desire. And that is your life. It is the life of this upadhi. And so that's actually very exciting to see. To just see how your life unfolds, how other people pull you into life. You know, they pull you into your life. Or your own desires push you towards something. And just see the order of that, how all of that works. But here, what it says is, say for a jnani, this, when the prarabdha karma, from the strength of the prarabdha, there is a desire for a certain bhoga, for a certain enjoyment, or for a desire for wanting something to be a certain way, that rises. That rises in the psyche. Then he says, klishyan means for the person who has vairagya, the jnani, that rising of that icha is, I wouldn't say, not the, quite the right word, is not annoyance. Klishya means it's an agitation. It's actually, klesha is an affliction. So this affliction, because now there's something to be do, you know. There's an impetus, there's an icha shakti there. So what they say is, okay, now for the jnani, this thing has, it's true for an ajnani also, but for a jnani it's in high relief. So this kind of thing has happened in spite of my vairagya, it has to be dealt with. It's there to be dealt with. So when that's the case, then, that being so, he says, esha bhuntaha, that person then enjoys it. And she lives that out, acts that out, and enjoys it. But in what way? He says, vishti grahitavat. Vishti grahitavat, vishti means forced labor. Like say, if, you know, when you have to go to work, you have to punch in your time clock and you've got to go and you have to be there for the 8 hours, you know, or you're doing manual labor or whatever it is and you're just punching in the clock and you have to stay there for that period of time. It's like a person's kind of been, okay, you've kind of forced into this situation. You're forced in the situation, you have to live it out, you know, until you're released from that desire. So it's not the same type of desire as a samsari. For a samsari, the desire is, I have to fulfill this so that I will be happy. For the jnani, that icha is there. That desire is there that drives you. It makes you commit to that particular action. And you have the will. The will to do it is there. That's the icha shakti. The will to do it is there. And that can be a nuisance. I mean, you're bound until your karma will bind you until you fulfill that. And so you go ahead and do that because that's your karma. And it's not, you can't say, I don't want to do it. Right? That won't come because you do want to do it. But you have to do that until you're released from that piece of prarabdha. So they say, by the strength of that prarabdha, that desire to accomplish something can come in your mind, and that desire to accomplish whatever it is will hold you until you accomplish it. That's the prarabdha karma. You are held in tow until you accomplish it. And there are various things that will hold you there. It can be the insistence of another. It can be the universe itself sticks you in the situation. Right? Or it can be the desire that comes from you to accomplish that. And that desire will not let you quit until it's fulfilled itself. And so there, in Vidyaranya is saying, you know, it's like forced labor. It's like being captured by forced labor, and you just have to, you have to wait it out until the, until you've accomplished what you're supposed to have accomplished. So that's how he looks at it. Interesting. Let's do the next one. You know, the thing is, I'll tell you, sometimes, because you may not have the same, I don't take so naturally to this way of thinking when I'm reading these. But these, that like Vidyaranya is really a great man. He's not an ordinary guy, you know. And so he may have a little different, I find for myself, he has a little different personality than I do, the way that I maybe think about things. But he's a great man, you know. And so it's a really interesting to think it through in the way that he is thinking it through, even though he kind of uses different words maybe and different images that I personally might use. But to think it through from his standpoint, how he's seen it, I find it really fascinating. It's really, really true also. It's really true. It's just he says these things in a way that somehow are not so natural to me. So anyway, well, I'm just sharing that with you in case you have the same.
He was a minister to the kingdom.
Yeah. He was. Yeah, he was a minister. And yeah. So, not a Christian minister. You know,
well,
like a
government
minister. Yeah.
Yeah. The Raja would tell him what to do and he would get it done.
Yeah. So let's do the next verse. Bunjana vapi buddhaha. Bunjana vapi buddhaha. Shraddhavanta kutumbinaha. Shraddhavanta kutumbinaha. Nadyapi karma naschinnam. Nadyapi karma naschinnam. Iti klishyanti santatam. Iti klishyanti santatam. Bunjanaha va api buddhaha. Shraddhavantaha kutumbinaha. Na adya api karma nas chinnam naha chinnam iti klishyanti santatam. Here he's talking about, forget the jnani. This is a person's experience in the world also. Not just for the jnani, this forced labor idea. So he says, the kutumbinaha means a person and a family member, the mother and the father of the children. So take the mother and the father. So in a family member, kutumbinaha, who has shraddha and buddha, also viveka. They have shraddha in the Veda, in the Vedanta. So they've got shraddha in the Veda, the Vedanta. Buddha, that viveka is there. Some understanding is there, right? So they're a person, cultured person within the culture who has some understanding of the Vedanta and aspires toward that also. Aspires toward that. The Swamiji has thousands and thousands of people in India who are like that. They're family people. They come. They always come to see him. They bring the whole family. They come to some classes. And what Swamiji is teaching and the Vedas, that is their highest value. That is what they want. That they have shraddha. And that's what they want to own. But what they will say, so these people these family members who have Shraddha and have some Viveka, and therefore this is their highest value, Bhunjanaha Api, even though they are enjoying their family life in the samsara, they're enjoying it, they're living it out, right? They will say, Nadapi karmanaha chimnam iti klishanti. The kind of klishanti, they kind of complain, you know, all the time. Satakam means I always say something like this. What can we do? You know, our karma isn't over yet. The karma, you know, even now, still, my karma is still going on. It still hasn't come to an end. Right? Means I'm impelled to live this life, to be involved in this way. You know, this isn't over yet. But so many will say the Swamiji like that, you know. But the value is there. You know, they'll even, so many people will tell Swamiji, their every intent really is actually to take sannyasa, you know, to leave the family, which is part of the Indian culture, at some point to leave the family, to take sannyasa, get everything in order, and to just live the same type of life, just live a life of study, live a life with Swamiji, not all of that type of thing. But, you know, I'm just not ready for that yet. That my karma is not over. You know, it's a way of saying, you know, I have to put in this time, and it's not that I don't want to. I want to. It's that swecha. I want to. This is my karma. It's not come to an end yet. I'm being held by this, and as once I'm not held by this, then I'll be free. Then I'll come to you. Right? That's the idea. So he's just using a worldly example, right, to kind of say that it's not only the sannyasi or the one who has knowledge that will talk about this, you know, that desire comes, you're held by that desire until it fulfills itself, right? So what jnani or jnani, you're held by it. So he's just making the comment that I'm not just talking for jnanis in the world. People are talking about this all of the time, right? They realize that they've been grabbed by a particular desire and they're held there until it's accomplished. Like it or not, that's another interesting thing. You can be held, like, for instance, in a relationship or in a job or even living in a particular place or doing some academic study, just all of the types of things. You may want to quit. You may not like it, but there's some desire that is holding you in place. And until that desire runs its course, right, you can't yourself let it go. And that creates being held to a particular desire like that is kind of like doing time, right? Because it creates some stress as long as the desire is there. So that's why he uses this example, because it's, in India it's a very, very appropriate, very common thing that's being said. Even now my karma is not over. What can I do? That's a good talk. Let's look at the next one. Nayam klesha prasamsara. Nayam klesha prasamsara. Tapakintu viraktata, tapakintu viraktata, brantik jnana nidhanohi, brantik jnana nidhanohi, tapas samsarika smritaha, tapas samsarika smritaha. Na ayam kleshaha atra, samsara tapaha, kintu viraktata. Branti jnana nidanaha hi tapaha samsarikaha smritaha. Now the doubt comes, do you mean that both the jnani is suffering from desire and the ajnani, both of them are suffering? in the Bhashyakara says, if both of them are suffering, then what's the use of this knowledge? Right? They're both suffering, they're both being held by this desire, and they're both burning, suffering, then what is the use of the knowledge? So he says, na ayam kleshaha atra samsaratapaha kintu viraktaka. He says, this klesha here that the jnani is suffering from, the klesha. Klesha means suffering or agitation, you know, discomfort. This klesha that the jnani is suffering from here that we're talking about, he says, it is na samsara tapaha. It's not the suffering of samsara. Tapaha means suffering, distress, burning. In terms of the sun, it means like the shining, burning heat of the sun. That scorching heat of the sun is tapaha. But in terms of for humans, it's, you know, distress, pain. This pain and distress. So the samsara tapaha, here, when we're talking about in terms of, for a jnani, this klesha is not the burning pain of samsara. Rather, the klesha for a jnani is viraktata. It's vairagya, right? It's vairagya. Means, I am being held by this desire, but there's nothing in me, right, that believes that my ananda is going to be fulfilled by the fulfillment of this desire. In other words, I have vairagya, and at the same time, I'm being held by my prarabdha to the accomplishment of this given thing. And it's a desire, right? If there's no desire there, there's nothing to hold you, right? So my desire is holding me, unless the creation has conspired to stick you in a situation, then the creation is holding you. But your desire can also hold you. Another person can hold you too, but that's the thing to understand, is that you are being held by something, and sometimes what's you're being held in terms of your prarabdha, sometimes what is holding you is your own desire, and there's nothing you can do about it. Jnani or ajnani, you're held. But the klesha for an ajnani is that I believe that my ananda, my fullness, lies in the fulfillment of that desire. And so there's pain and stress around that whole thing. Where for a jnani, the klesha is the vairagya. Means there's nothing in me that really wants to do this, as though my ananda is at stake, and at the same time I'm held by it. So there's vairagya, and at the same time being held by the desire. So it's kind of an odd situation. So he says, rather it's viraktata, it's vairagya. And then he says, now what is it for samsari? He says, bhranti jnana nidanaha hi tapaha samsarikaha. The samsarika tapa, the tapa that's the distress that's born of samsara, that distress, distress has its cause, nidana, bhranti jnana nidana, in bhranti jnanam, in false knowledge, mithya jnanam. Bhranti means is the false knowledge. So what is causing that tapa, that distress, is ignorance. You know, is the misconception where I've superimposed my ananda onto the world, and now I have to go and get it. Right? So there, that's a real suffering, right? It's all mitya, but still, it's a mitya suffering. It's a real suffering, because my whole being is at stake. For jnani, there's nothing at stake. So that's all totally mitya. The whole thing is mitya. And ajnani, there is no mitya. Mitya is yet to be discovered, right? The mitya tor, that's yet to be discovered. And so that means for jnani, this is all real. If I'm suffering, the suffering is real. I am suffering. If I'm happy, the happiness is real. I am happy. Now, I am happy, I am suffering. I am happy, I am suffering. All of it is as time-bound as the experience. That is the truth. For Ajnani, that is the truth. So the suffering is real as long as it is there. The happiness is real as long as it is there. but there is no underlying adhisthana. There is no satyam that is stable. So the only reality is the reality that I'm experiencing, and those realities are time-bound. And when I have a desire, the desire is for something that will give me the happiness that I'm seeking. And so the happiness becomes an object, in a sense. It's an object that I need to attain. And so when I attain it, and then I'm having the experience of happiness, that experience is real. That is what it is. Now I am having the experience of happiness. When that experience of happiness is taken away, that is also real. Now the experience of happiness is gone, and I am without it. This is all, this is the hell of samsara. You know, because we're dealing in realities, we're not dealing in mithya. For a jnani, this whole thing is mithya. There is nothing at stake. There is no ananda at stake. There is nothing that can ever take my ananda from me. My ananda, the ananda is my own being, which is changeless. My mind can never, ever be away from that. And so anything in the mithya, in Bhagavan's creation, that takes this mind and focuses on something is an irritant in a sense, because the mind is being held in that condition. Even though there's nothing about me at all or about my buddhi that thinks that my ananda is away from me. I'm talking about nishta. I'm not talking about being pulled away, you know, pulled away by pratibandhika jnanam, by obstructions. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about jnana nishta. Right, so there's nothing, there's no being pulled away. And at the same time, your prarabdha, you know, pulls the mind in this direction or that direction. And there you are. That's how it is. And so you're held there to complete that. And that's fine. That's another thing. That's why the klesha itself is mithya. For jnani, the klesha or the irritation or the hard work or doing labor, you know, putting in your labor, all of that, that's also mithya. Right? And so there's also no reaction on top of that. So that's a vairagya on top of vairagya. So there's no, for jnani, there's nothing that isn't mithya, except for satyam. Except for the self. Everything else is mithya. And everything else is mithya. Everything else is Ishvara. You can say both. You can say all of this is mithya, means it has no intrinsic reality away from satyam, from my being. And this mithya is Ishvara. That's what makes it so beautiful.
Mm.
This mithya is Ishvara. It's an infinite order. You know, it's a much bigger story. It's an infinite intelligence. It's an infinite manifest knowledge that we call Ishvara, of which this body, mind, sense organs are a part. And so if you understand that, have that kind of that appreciation of that, then as you even knowing, for instance, even understanding this swecha, anyecha, you know, the anicca, these three types of prarabdha, even understanding these types of prarabdha, that's understanding Ishvara's order. And from a jnani perspective, you get kind of a kick out of it. By that I mean an interest in the infinite intelligence of which no single jiva is at the center. That's what so needs to be understood. This is the Ishvara, the manifest whole. This jiva is not at the center of it. And this jiva and this jiva is not at the center of it. The whole is the center. So it's an infinite order of which there are many, 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 you could say, competing parts. There are many, many, many interrelated parts. And not one part is more or less important than another part. Right? And so there's a dance of the whole, of which this is a part. Right? Your own upadhi is a part of that whole and the infinite order of the whole. No upadhi is the center of the whole. But the self that you are is the center of the whole. That's why we always feel like we're in the center. Right? Because in fact, we are, as the Atma. You are the center. And this manifest creation, this infinite manifest creation, is you. It is your manifestation for you as Atma, as Brahman. This creation is not somebody else's creation. This is you. And so you are at the center. You are the center. You are the truth of the whole. You are the me of the whole. But you are equally the me of every single part of the whole. Because you're the self of the whole, you're the self of equally the self of every part of the whole. Right? It's only one self. And so therefore, one part, like my particular upadhi, is not at the center, is not the most important thing in the dynamics of the whole, in my prarabdha. See, if we each look at our prarabdha, our life, the life that unfolds around us, which you are continually a part of until this body drops, okay? So your body, mind, sense organs, just because you are the continuing factor from birth to death in your particular prarabdha, you gonna get me? Mm-hmm. Your upadhi is not the central point of any given moment, because every part of the moment is equally yourself. It's equally yourself. Every part of every moment is equally yourself. And so you're not any more important than any other part. And so when you don't get your way, this is why. You see what I mean? When you don't get your way, it's not that you are not getting your way. It's that the whole that's in the whole is getting its way. And you are a part of that whole. And so that's a very wonderful to really understand that, especially when your being is not at stake, when your wholeness is not at stake, which it isn't. The Atma is never at stake. And so say, when you understand that there's a much greater order unfolding here, then you can revel, really, in Ishvara's intelligence. If say if you look at this creation as infinite manifest knowledge, then the infinite knowledge is much greater, much more intricate, much more complex in its infinity than the limited knowledge coming out of your mind. Your mind is so limited compared to infinite, right? And so say if you have that drishti, have that vision, then it's an incredibly beautiful experience to watch the movement of the creation. If you think of yourself as in the center and all meant only for this upadhi, then it can be a problem. But when you watch the balancing act of the whole and just think, like, I'll often ask myself, how is Bhagavan going to handle this situation? How will this unfold? Because you're only a little part of the whole, so to kind of appreciate, how is Bhagavan going to handle this situation? So that Ishvara Buddhi, and that Ishvara Buddhi with the Mithyatva, you know, is the overarching vision of the jnani. And so when we talk about klesha, the klesha of the jivamukta is nothing at all like the klesha of a samsari. The klesha of a samsari, we're dealing with not with mitya, not with Ishvara, not with Ishvara's manifest knowledge. We're dealing with Ishvara for the samsari, Ishvara who's other than me. An Ishvara that is away from me. The whole vision of the Upanishads, of the Upanishad, is to bring the knowledge to the jiva that in fact the self that you are is Ishvara, that you are Ishvara. Until that's known, you are a jiva, this is the world, and Ishvara is there. Ishvara the creator, God. I believe in God, I believe in Ishvara. I pray to Ishvara. You know, Ishvara is the creator of me and the creator of this world, but there's that duality is there. And I need to be happy. Well, we're just dealing with realities. And so that samsara tapa is something real. It's real in the sense from the standpoint of the jiva. Nani doesn't have any such. It's just the vairagya is there, so the interest in getting pulled into this and that is not there. That same type of interest is not there. But it's the, so it's the klesha of vairagya. It's not the klesha of any type of pain. The klesha of maybe nuisance from Vidyaranya's standpoint. Like, oh my God, how could I get myself involved in all of this? And here I am stuck in it. But there's no sadness there. There's not unhappiness there. There's no burning. You know. So, okay, let's stop there. Take a minute. Purnamidah, Purnamidachyate, Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.